are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on FOW Radio Network. I'm Patrick, as always, joined by Danny Danger. Danny, another week, more pro wrestling news. Some good, some bad, and some possibly ugly. Well, let's start with the in-between now, with Clash of Champions that we had this past Sunday. You know, we were wondering what it was going to be like, and there were some matches that were interesting. There were some matches that we were looking forward to. In the end, what were your thoughts on Clash of Champions, Raw's first, you know, standalone pay-per-view special?
I think they did a decent job of building a show that, you know, like, centered around itself, I guess, a little bit. Making it feel kind of like an independent event. But a lot of the matches were just kind of, you know, and I don't know if that's attributable to one of the many things that we've talked about in the past about, you know, how you see the matches so many times. Like we saw, you know, less than a week before, we saw Roman Reigns and Rusev and stuff like, you know, like in the, and the, those kind of things, you know? So they don't feel like new matches. They don't feel like first time matches. They're not matches fans are clamoring for because they've seen these guys hit each other and wrestle in matches a bunch of times in the last couple months. And then some of them just don't deliver like we would want them to. The women's triple threat was kind of disappointing. It felt a lot like the match at Mania where it was the ladies triple threat at Mania where it was kind of rushed at times and it's way too much Charlotte to be healthy for a conducive match. She's not at that experience level and she's just, you know, where she can literally handle and dictate the pace of a match. I mean, you talked, she's fairly robotic when it comes to promos. She's very robotic when it comes to that. And then when she starts getting worked up and trying to get kind of higher energy to match some of the girls she's in the ring with, she starts getting sloppy and then it starts looking weird and it's just, start kind of going, ooh, and you start cringing sometimes because things are slipping up and around, you know? I think she just kind of got thrust into the spotlight too fast, too soon because, you know, she has the physique and the look that they kind of want. And then, of course, she has the name value that they love. You know, WWE loves second and third generation stars. You know, they like being able to thrust somebody in the spotlight and already have people's eyes on them because they're related to somebody that they know.
Yeah. And the fact that she's Ric Flair's daughter.
Well, yeah, it's not just somebody they know. It's like somebody who they consider, you know, a god amongst men, you know, unless he's drinking. But that's a different story for a different time. But so, yeah, she's well, you know, the name is well known, even if they're not calling her Charlotte Flair, you know. But, I mean, it was, like I said, overall, it was decent. It was okay. It was enjoyable. But it just, I don't know if it's me, it probably has something to do with me where I'm just feeling more and more like wrestling shows, main wrestling shows, indie wrestling shows. It comes down to, it just feels like a collection of matches rather than, an overall story that somehow combines and weaves into each other.
So more like a standalone wrestling show that we would attend locally where we know some names, but you know, we really hadn't followed up what's been going on and we're just going there to see the matches, interactions.
Well, yeah, kind of, well, not necessarily. I just mean that, that it doesn't seem like there's always not necessarily story between the matches. Maybe I'm kind of rambling off, but, it just kind of this wrestling show just kind of felt there. You know, there were some good moments, there were some bad moments, but it didn't do anything to get me excited to want to sit down and watch it again. It didn't really do much to get me excited to sit down on Monday and watch the fallout from it. You know, like it's just, it was okay. It was enjoyable while I was watching it, and that's about it.
Now, do you think that's because there's so many shows out there already? And now you have a special for Raw and SmackDown almost every month.
That could be it. I think that could be part, that could be problematic over the next couple months, where everybody just kind of starts to yeah, you just, it's almost like you get kind of overloaded and fatigued to where there's so many shows, it's hard to feel like any of them are more important than the other if they're not taking special big, you know, if they're not trying really hard to force them as bigger, bigger shows than just, it's just this show that we had a couple weeks ago, you know? So I don't know. Not really sure there.
Well, one thing we can be sure of, is that nothing is for sure, especially when you're booked in a best of seven series and where yeah. the winner will get a prize and there is no winner.
They didn't even really mention the prize, did they?
Yeah, they said that they would get a, you know, a feature title opportunity or something like that. You know, it's kind of like they were using
very vague.
Dario's type of, you know, you're going to get an opportunity one day, someday.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it's kind of this.
But they never mentioned what title.
Maybe. Yeah.
So the referee stoppage and Sheamus and Cesaro go 3-3-1. So they're tied, and Mick Foley the next night gives him a tag team title shot.
Yeah, since they both work so hard, they're now getting a title shot together.
Do you like? Are you looking forward to the team of Cesaro and Sheamus?
Well, I guess they're letting them cool off a little bit as feuding, since they had them fight against each other so much. They'll maybe team together a little bit, then their egos will start to get in the way, and then maybe they'll have the big blow off the feud, you know, in some kind of 2 out of 3 falls or some kind of an Iron Man match, you know, some kind of gimmick match like that, where they can definitively say once and for all that I'm better than you, and put it to rest. So I think this is kind of a way to prolong the program between them while putting them together. And I think it'll, you know, they'll probably add a little comedy in there to it, like a kind of an odd couple thing. You know, where Cesaro is maybe a little more serious and Sheamus is maybe wanting to have a little more fun or play around, you know, not train as hard. I don't know. They may do some sketches like that, but they could easily draw this out with them as a team for another couple months before they have the blow off to do their feud.
Yeah. Or they could become best friends forever.
Yeah, they
could
be BFFs.
They could create another League of Nations. You know, if Tyson goodness. Kidd comes back, then they have Canada, Switzerland, and Ireland.
That's true. That's true. European Union, you know, of anything. Well, not really, because Ireland's part of the UK.
Yep.
And Britain.
And Canada's
left.
Not part of the Europe.
And Britain left. Yeah, so it's not really that. It's. I guess they were all once, you know,
They may do a League of Nations. They could be the new League of Nations.
Well, see, it's at this point, it's kind of speculated at this point when and if Tyson Kidd's going to come back or not. Like,
yeah, I mean,
we haven't heard a whole lot about we haven't heard a whole lot about his progress and how he's doing.
Yeah, I think that they're pretty much mum until they get good news. And yeah. Another thing that I enjoyed the main event, Rollins and Owens. This felt a lot like the Chris Jericho show, with Jericho defeating Sami Zayn.
Yeah, which we can talk about that for weeks and weeks about the downfall of Sami Zayn after the biggest win of his career.
And then Jericho's involved in the main event. Which leads me to believe that this could eventually down the road be something where Jericho may cost Owens the title, and then they could feud against each other. They could go from BFFs to straight up FFs.
Yeah, but do you really want to see Jericho in a title program again, though?
I don't, but I mean the way this is looking. With Jericho being as involved with his best friend Kevin Owens, I don't see anything else happening at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know how much McMahon loves his multi-man matches.
Yeah, multi-man championship matches, yeah. Yeah, the three-man feud and these kind of things. It seems we get one every other.
Yeah, now lastly, speaking of Clash of Champions and the direction of where things are going with the Raw, you know, roster, the New Day defeat, yeah, you know, the club on Clash of Champions. Then they defeat them again the next night.
Yeah.
So now they defeated them three times in a row. I mean, what's the point? Did they just want to give them 400 days as champions?
I guess just to have them set the record. You know, kind of like they did with Nikki. They let her set the record, and then shortly thereafter they had her drop it.
I would have liked to see the club win the belts, and they could have been the
big, it seems like,
team. I mean, they, especially when they talk about how decorated they are from their days in Japan, to just have them job out the New Day every single time.
Like you said, I think now that we're past this 400 days, I mean, you have to pretty much, if you want to take and have people take Anderson and Gallows seriously, you have to let them win the belts soon. If you have them just keep getting beat by New Day, even if it's kind of, there's comedic shenanigans and these kind of things, then people are going to stop seeing them as a threat, because they're going to say, oh, they're dopey guys. They may be big and strong and scary, but you can outsmart them easily. You know, which then they lose some of their credibility as competitors if they're just the big stupid meatheads, you know, who could be beaten by childish shenanigans every single time. I would have liked to see them win when they did the rematch on Monday. I thought, okay, so they wanted them to have, you know, win at the pay-per-view, and now they're going to drop them the next night. But they didn't do that either. So not really sure where all they're going with this.
Yeah, well, now you have the number one contenders being Sheamus and Cesaro. So, most likely they could probably win the belts. I mean, apparently it's the season of the mixed matches. You see with Rhino and Heath Slater on SmackDown, and now Cesaro and Sheamus on Raw.
That's another thing that, you know, that I've always kind of harped on about tag team wrestling in WWE is they always seem to put over two singles wrestlers over a long-standing tag team. Whenever two singles wrestlers, even if they're kind of mediocre singles wrestlers, they'll still beat a long-tenured tag team, despite the fact that we're supposed to believe that these guys who work and train and all this stuff, you know, travel together as a team, are supposed to be some of the best in the world. The makeshift tag team who kind of gets thrown together, you know, can just kind of beat them with seemingly relative ease. Yeah. So it hurts that makes the tag division look like crap when two guys can slap themselves together, you know, who haven't been training as a team, who haven't been working on that continuity and, you know, the strategy of a tag team, can come in and win the belts and hold on to them until they decide they don't want them anymore, and then drop them back to tag teams and walk away. It used to make me so mad when they did that during like the Attitude Era and stuff. Like, guys were feuding, you know, similar to Sheamus and Cesaro, or you'd have, you know, Steve Austin and The Undertaker feuding. Oh, we're going to put them in a tag match against the champions. Of course, they somehow win. And now they're tag champions for like 2 weeks until they basically disagree with each other. And that's why they lose the belts. Not because the other team was better than them, but because they argued with each other. You know, it's...
Yeah,
it's,
I never liked that either.
It's the importance of singles competitors over tag teams that Dari and directly now our industry has been focused on. You know? When do you see any promotion have their tag team championship in the main event of a show, and their singles champion is not, you know, is in a match? it's a big rarity. And that's because the tag team championships have been seen as a secondary, a lower level title for so long by the main heads of WWE that a lot of people just follow suit.
Agreed. I was never a fan of that either. And I think one of my least favorite ones was they did it with Austin and Michaels, I believe.
Yeah, Austin and Michaels too.
You know, in there. So it's going to be interesting, but, you know, you have these mixed matches of tag teams. Moving on to SmackDown, you look at the tag teams division there. A much more stronger division, I think. And it's funny how the shorter show and the more depleted show, it's the less frustrating show. You know, first of all, you have John Cena on there, which, you know, John Cena continues to show why he's one of the best, the top guys in the industry.
Yeah, but even while doing very little storyline-wise, like, he's not in a major feud. He's not in a major title hunt. Well, but he is, he's somehow. Well, he is, but he's not. Yeah,
but he doesn't feel like always it in a hunt. Because,
yeah, it doesn't feel like it's a John Cena show, but he is doing strong work. Yeah.
Yeah. And so with that, I look at the tag teams. The Usos finally got turned heels, which I love. And now they got new gear, new music. I definitely like that. So that definitely will be fun with them and Heath and Rhino. Another thing is The Miz against Dolph Ziggler once again at No Mercy. And Dolph Ziggler, if he loses, he retires. He doesn't go to Raw.
Yeah, did they specify that? Yes, that he literally cannot just go to Raw?
Okay. Right. It's not a just go to Raw, don't go on vacation, and come back in a few months.
Because that was the thing they used to do in the brand split, was guys, you know, like loser leaves Raw match. And you're like, okay, so then he takes a couple weeks off and he comes back on SmackDown, you know? So I guess they're trying to specify to give fans the illusion that Dolph's either going to win or he's going to go away. Right. You think he's going to go away and come back as Nikki? And they're going to redo the Spirit Squad with a bunch of guys from NXT?
I hope not. I think that he'll probably just win the IC title and
continue to. And then the next night, lose it to Miz. Yeah, then lose it to Miz on Tuesday or whatever.
It could possibly happen that way.
Well, Miz is doing such strong work with the championship. There's no reason to have him lose it right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's
unless you do something to, like, you know, they keep teasing this thing with he and Daniel Bryan. And so if they do something where Daniel somehow affects the outcome of it a little bit and it tries to continue this program with Daniel Bryan, The Miz, that eventually leads to Daniel coming out of retirement and wrestling like one more WrestleMania match or something.
That could also work.
Otherwise there's, if Daniel's not going to wrestle Miz ever, then it makes this whole thing a little pointless.
Well, isn't because that's all people are, sometimes.
Yeah, but that's all people are going to want to see from it. And if they see anything else but Daniel Bryan getting in the ring and beating the crap out of Miz, disappointment's going to fall.
I agree.
Daniel Bryan can pick as many guys as he wants to fight in his place, but until he gets in there and actually has a match and beats the Miz and shuts his mouth, you know, then the fans are not going to feel that they're getting the reward they've been teasing and they've been clamoring for.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why it never made sense. Now, I will say something about talking smack is quickly becoming the best TV show on, you know, or wrestling programming out there.
It
started with the Miz shooting on Daniel Bryan. Did you see this past talking smack?
I didn't, but I heard about the really strong segment from John Cena.
John Cena was beautiful on it. He basically
they were saying that this is kind of like the John Cena that people haven't seen in so long, and it's the John Cena when you watch this and go, that's why he's been at the top for 12 years.
Yeah, it was definitely a great way for him just to speak his mind. And, you know, you're able to break, you know, away from scripting. So that's why I love talking smack. And so a lot of, you know, there's been a whole big conversation on Twitter about why the Cruiserweight Classic is not eligible for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards.
It's really?
Yeah, it's a discussion. Dave says it's not allowed because it's not enough episodes or something like that.
Huh.
It's okay. Some baloney like that. Anyways, somebody posted him the question today if Talking Smack, was eligible, and he said yes.
So Talking Smack is, but Cruiserweight Classic is not?
Right.
Is that because Cruiserweight Classic is not an ongoing
television ongoing program?
Thing?
I guess so.
It's like a mini series, basically.
I said, it's something that's been going around. I haven't necessarily been following it. All I know is that Dave said no to the CWC, yes, Talking Smack.
Okay, well, see, I'm not like the biggest. I'm not like a Mets or zombie, so I don't really follow what anything that I hear about him or with him or any of that stuff is from people like Dylan, like on Twitter. Other than that, like I don't really follow any of his stuff. Don't know what he's talking about. I don't really care about year-end awards. Like, I kind of like the PWI just because there's the nostalgia factor to it, you know?
Right.
And it's like an actual magazine publication. But I don't have that kind of nostalgia for Metzer because I haven't been reading him since I was 13, you know? So
I didn't know he existed
to
when I was 13.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, you know? And so I don't think his opinion doesn't matter that much to me. Like, his opinion matters to other people that I like, but I don't really follow him enough to know what his awards are and what they really mean and what kind of effect they have on the industry, if any, you know. Like, he's just a dude.
Right.
He is just a dude who talks about wrestling. He's just like us, except he has more experience and bigger widespread things. So in 25 years, you and I could be giving awards that people, you know, get all excited and super hyped up about.
If
we play our cards, right? Yeah, they could be the Foeys or, you know, the FOWs, you know?
Yeah, I get you. And I'm kind of the same. I don't follow everything he says, but, you know, especially when the wrestling Twitter complains about something, you know, that's when I hear it.
That's the only time I hear about it, yeah.
Yeah, so when somebody's complaining about some people talk about the bias that he has.
Yeah.
For
yeah, of course.
When I hear people talk about the bias they have that Dave has for some promotions because he loves PWG and New Japan, like if it was Minor for
God. Yeah, he loves Japanese stuff over just, and that's where it comes down to him being one man is the difficulty, I think, because as a person, you're going to have certain types of wrestling or certain styles or certain people that you like better than others, just because you like them, even if you're trying to be impartial and you still like this person. If you have a team of people, then somebody can sit here and say, okay. Well, yes, you like this wrestler, so you're holding them up at a higher regard where I can look more objectively at this person and say, hey, you know, such and such is not the greatest wrestler alive. Here's why and why and why. You think they are not because you're a fan and you're overlooking that the positive down, you know, the potential down downturns on them.
Yeah.
You know, the negatives they have against them. So that's where he is. He's one dude, so he's going to have preferences. He's going to have things he likes. He likes PWG because they let him, you know, they let him come to their shows and let him front row and make him almost as much a part of the show as they do some of the wrestlers sometimes. So, right.
And then you think not that I want to make this the Dave Meltzer conversation, but I also think about how it's funny with some fans, they listen to what Dave says, and then when they don't form their own opinions about shows and matches, but they basically reword the things that they said, and that's how they have their opinion. I'm like,
that's just
like you said, he's just one man, and he has his preferences, And he's going to write however he wants to write. That's his right. But yeah, I like people to have their own opinions, you know?
Yeah.
And not just go by what somebody else tells them.
And that's just one of those things that's life, though, I think, is there's just people are going to have their own, you know, they're going to look to one or two people, be it a specific newspaper or a specific news channel, and those people are going to put their skew and their slant on things, and then they say, oh, well, I like this for whatever reason, so my opinion is now based very heavily on the information that this person is providing. They're going to take, you know, they're going to take whatever news show or newspaper or entertainment website they like to go to, and that's going to be the basis for their opinion, and, you know, they kind of treat it as their own.
Right. All right. So, looking forward to talking smack every Tuesday night. Great fun show. Short, you know, it's less than an hour. I think, yeah. I can't remember sometimes. I mean, I don't even go an hour. No, I think
I think it kind of fluctuates, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's not an exact. It's just kind of these are the segments we have. We're going to end it. And that's the advantage of it being on the network, is it doesn't have to drag. If they only have 35 minutes of programming, they don't have to stretch that out to an hour if they don't want to.
Yeah.
They don't have to sit here and say, okay, well, we got commercial breaks planned for this, this, and this. We have to buff up this show and add this and add this.
Right. Well, let's move to the WWE Network now. We'll be talking about SmackDown in more details next week as we look towards No Mercy. But yes. NXT last week's episode, this week's episode, I forgot, we're kind of caught up now on NXT. We had Liv Morgan basically get destroyed by Asuka, as everybody else gets destroyed by Asuka.
Yeah, but then it's kind of, we'll see, and Liv was kind of trying to stand up and say, you know, hey, you know, I'm not just going to sit back in the back and wait for my turn, you know, like she was trying to step up and say, Asuka thinks she's run the division, but she hasn't gone through me and you know, and this kind of thing. Admirable, brave, but stupid. And she pretty much got steamrolled.
Yep.
And then Asuka's like, well, you know, like, I said I cleared out the division. One person stood up and said, no, you haven't. And I destroyed them harder than I've destroyed anybody else. Who's going to stop her? And that's the thing. The only person that's going to give her a challenge in the coming months is Ember Moon. That's the only one that
she also they're building up to.
She
defeated Mandy Rose. Who's looking like, you know, she's doing very well. I'm impressed.
You think Mandy's getting a lot better in the ring?
She's definitely getting... Hey, look, there's a reason why she is on NXT and the Tough Enough winner, whose name I can't even remember right now.
Was it Sarah Lee?
Sarah Lee, yes. She's doing house shows.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. We'll see what they have with Mandy Rose. The character she is on NXT is very similar to, you know, the Eva Marie type character. She thinks she's this, you know, this heaven sent creature, you know, who's there to, you know, who should be adored and honored, you know, admired from the second she walks in the building. She kind of has a similar character, and Corey Graves doesn't let us forget that. That, you know, since Eva Marie's left, it's now Mandy Rose, Mandy Rose, Mandy Rose. But with her increased wrestling ability, I think she has more potential staying power. Because I think the Eva Marie thing, like with her, you know, playing the gimmick and, oh, I can't wrestle and that kind of thing, like that's really cool. It's a good way to get heat. It works now, but that's only going to work for so long.
Right.
I think. But if you combine that kind of thing with somebody who can actually wrestle when they get in the ring, I think they're going to have a longer career in WWE.
Yeah, definitely. But like I said, she looked good to me in this match.
Yeah.
Of course, she did wrestle Ember Moon, who we're both big fans of.
Yeah.
But definitely, I think that She's definitely looks like she's growing as a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. One of the other big things is that I wanted to mention was the Samoa Joe Rampage.
I was about to bring that up. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. The twins. Yeah. Yeah, he destroyed the twins. And that's the thing is, because Joe's technically kind of being a heel right now, it was kind of assumed that, you know, when he said he's going to destroy the whole roster, that means he's just going to go after the face side of the roster. But this is showing that he's, you know, this is showing a little bit more realism in the fact that he's just picking anybody. He's not just picking on guys the fans like. He's picking on guys the fans don't like and showing, hey, man, these guys are tough and unbeatable, but I'm a monster and I can beat them. But see, so that's the positive aspect of it. The negative aspect of it is goes back to what we were talking about. These guys are a tag team. These guys work together, live together, travel together, etc. They're supposed to know each other inside and out. One guy can come and beat the crap out of both of them because this guy's a really good singles wrestler and they're two really good tag wrestlers. So I like the positive aspect of it, what they were trying, the story they were trying to tell, but I dislike it for the reason that we mentioned with makeshift teams over established tag teams.
Yeah. But another point though is here's we have Samoa Joe. How long is he going to be on this rampage before either he gets Nakamura or he gets the title?
Yeah.
And I think that this is something a little bit different, a different way to go after the belt without,
it is,
you know, having to put Nakamura and Joe together. Of course, Nakamura is out of action due to injury sustained. So so this is definitely a way to prolong this without them, again, like we talked about in the past, without them having to physically touch each other until takeover.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's the thing is that NXT has that advantage too, is that they have a lot less TV. So you don't see the guys multiple hours every single week. You see them for 1 hour a week. And on that 1 hour, you're not going to see the entire roster. You're only going to see a small piece of the roster. So I think that helps keep NXT feeling fresh because you're not seeing the same 15 guys, you know, in the same six programs over and over again. Each program may only get followed up every other week or every 2 or 3 weeks, you know, every 3 weeks, maybe sometimes. Or a program comes and it hits a couple weeks and, you know, a couple weeks in a row and then it takes a week off. It helps things it helps make things feel fresh still. It helps prolong them, and by the time these guys do battle at the takeover event, it adds excitement to the match because it's not something that you've seen as over and over and over again.
Yeah, definitely, and so I like it. I like it a lot. But you know what I liked even better? I mean, because this show, I think this show was great from top to bottom. We saw our two of our favorite women wrestlers and current favorite women wrestlers on NXT. I guess you can both agree on that. We get to see some more Joe beat up people.
Yeah, beat the snot of people, which we both love. We have a soft spot for watching Samoa Joe just crush people.
And then, but the main event was dear to my heart, where either Tommy versus Lince Dorado. And I'm just thinking Lince Dorado, you know, I mean, we've had the pleasure to see him wrestle, you know, in shows in front of 30, 40 people.
And
now we've seen him wrestle on Monday Night Raw and
on NXT.
Now he's main evented an episode of NXT.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a sense of cool.
Yeah, it's so cool, but like at the same time, when you see somebody on smaller stages and you kind of follow their career, there's almost like a sense of pride. Like you almost kind of see them as kind of your own in a sense. And so when they really succeed, you kind of feel proud. You're like, man, I'm proud. And I guess because you feel a stronger connection to somebody when you follow them for longer, when you've seen them at smaller places, and now you're seeing them at bigger places. Like with Cedric. Like everybody's really, all these fans are like proud of Cedric and all this. How often do you say that about like people in entertainment or in sports or something, that like you're proud of somebody? It's because like it's only once you watch them at smaller levels rise up to the big levels and you feel like a kind of connection to this person almost because they've shared in the presentation of so many great memories in your life. And I think although we haven't maybe been following Lince as long as we've been following some of the other people, we do still have that kind of connection to him, you know, and we're happy to see him get the success because we know how good he is at the same time, we're proud for him and of him, because we know that, like, that means that not only is he performing at the level, but when the eyes are on him, when the eyes that matter on him, he's still performing at that level. He's seizing the advantages and the opportunities given to him, which is, you know, is just as important as blowing it out of the water at a show in front of 30 people.
Yeah. So to me, NXT was pretty good this week. A treat that we're getting on NXT is that they're bringing back the Dusty Classic.
They're bringing back, yes.
They're bringing the with Dusty 16... Rhodes Tag Team Classic, 16 teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
The matches are going to be happening throughout the NXT shows.
Like last year, right. They're going to do it, have a few of them on the house shows and stuff.
And
right?
The finals will be at NXT TakeOver in Canada. They're going to be rolling out teams via social media and other platforms.
Yeah.
From, you know, as we go. So announced so far.
Six so far? How many teams have they announced so far?
All right, so here we go. I'm going to list you the teams.
Okay.
Andrade Cien Almas and Cedric Alexander.
An odd pairing, but,
right,
you know, we'll see how it works.
The NXT Tag Team Champions, The Revival.
Of course, they should get very far in that.
Team DIY, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa.
DIY.
DIY. You said DIY.
Do it I say yourself. It
however I want, Danny.
Yeah. It's for do-it-yourself.
Hey, you know, in Spanish, that's how you say it, okay?
Gotcha. It's the loss of translation, I guess.
Yes. Let's go with that one. That sounds like a plan. So this is a team that was made this last week. The Glorious Ten, Bobby Roode, and Ty Dillinger.
Yeah, and I think that's an odd pairing, too. One's technically a face. Yeah, the ones that have been announced.
Tino Sabatelli and Riddick Moss.
Okay, I don't know who Moss is, and I don't like Sabatelli, so they'll go out first round.
We can only hope so. All right,
They'll lose it like Corpus Christi or something.
This was gonna make some people really happy everywhere.
Yeah,
Hideo Itami and Kota Ibushi.
Yeah, that's a wild. Yeah, that's a wild team. They
can literally have kill the ability somebody. To go.
Yeah, they could, but yeah. Yeah, that's going to be wild. I mean, there is easily top four as far as they, you know, being in the semifinals.
Right. So that's a six teams right there so far.
Six out of 16. And some of the others we can probably say we know we're going to be in there. Authors of Pain are probably going to be there. Yeah. TM61's probably going to be in there.
Yeah, probably.
You know, I mean, do you think that they'll bring one or two teams from Raw or SmackDown to come back down to this? To fill it out, like you think the Bald Villains.
Well, you could do somebody like, you know, the
Hype Bros or something.
Yeah, Fabrice or whatever you call them.
Oh, Brizango. Yeah, but you don't think you need to.
You could, but I mean, the Ascension would probably be a team that gets put in there.
Yeah, that's just because one of them's still coming back from injury.
So you have a few. I mean. You have
a few teams off the top of your head.
You get the Twins, whose names I still don't remember, so they continue to be the Twins.
And
they have a few other teams that they've used in the past before. So
and they can slap a lot of people together, which they, I guess this year, there'll be more slapped together teams, whereas last time there were a few more longer tenured teams. Although the finals did come down to two slap together teams over the longer tenured teams.
Yes.
So maybe this year we at least get. The last year it was a lot of fun. It was entertaining. You saw a lot of really good matches, and I like the fact that they did something to make the house shows feel a little more important for some of the people who were there. They say this match is, you know, is part of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. It makes those B-level swing house shows at least have something a little more important to them.
Right. So that should definitely be fun and see what other tactics they make.
Yeah.
Maybe
they bring in...
Look, they could bring outsiders in. Again, yeah, bring in some spoilers new people. Of okay. Not teams, per se.
But well, people who are at the tapings, basically.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and they could bring in somebody as an outside and literally have them go out first round, but it gets exposure for those people, similar to the way they do with when they're bringing in you know, outside talent to use as enhancement. You know, they put them over really well on the microphone and everything. Like when Tessa Blanchard or Rachel Ellering or Santana Garrett has been on there, you know, they let them use the name they use on the independent scene a lot of times. You know, and they put them over as, you know, being traveled and being hyped and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, they lose. But they put them over as somebody who should be potentially taken seriously, even though you haven't seen them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And then it makes those people look that much stronger when they go back on the indie scene, you know, hey, fresh off an NXT appearance.
Right.
You know, and that kind of.
Now, quickly, I do want to move on from WWE. But I want to just talk about Paige for a minute. She posted on Twitter that it's time to get her neck taken care of. I'm paraphrasing here. So she can come back stronger and kick butt. So it looks like her neck injuries are still lingering, and she might be looking at surgery.
Yeah, that's it. Sounds like she's kind of alluding to surgery. But, right. I mean, she yet again, she's being kind of vague. You know, like young kids are, you know, they never want to commit to anything. They just kind of, you know, well, maybe it's time to maybe do some stuff and maybe in junk and things. You know, so I don't know. I mean, 2 weeks ago, everybody pretty much thought that she had quit WWE already and was hiring a lawyer. Now we're finding that that's not really the case. You know, she may be looking into somebody to look over her contract, you know, for possible discrimination, or that could have been a entire work of, you know, the wrestling media, as well. But so it's kind of hard to tell what's real and what's not with her, even when she posts something on Twitter.
True. So, but that's the latest update on her. Now let's move. Yeah. Let's continue to get on, talk about things on Wednesday nights. Last week's Lucha Underground, We had Dario's
Wheel of Doom or whatever. I can't remember what they're calling it. Yeah.
Dial of Doom is what he called
it. Dial of Doom,
Dario's
yeah.
Dario's Dial of Doom came back, and we had
The return of the Mac to the temple.
And he and Montez had a good match.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
Two
big guys clashed. That was fun.
Yeah.
Then what do you think about this? And now it's funny that they're doing this with Cage and Tejano Jr.
Yeah, Tejano, where they're doing like they're now doing a best of series.
Right. Well,
which is like you said, defense, it's funny because it was taped like 3 months ago. Yeah. Yeah. But now it seems like they're copying WWE by having two big. By having like the Haas division as one of the terms that's being thrown around now, the Haas division series. And see, like, and I like Cage. I think Cage is good, you know, but like Tejano just is too flat. I think at least Cage has a little bit of personality.
You're right. There's no personality. Tejano is kind of bland.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, I mean, he's a huge star in Mexico. So I don't know if there's something that they're not, that isn't connecting. It's a cultural thing, or if it's like, his character's toned down, or, you know, like, I mean, maybe him just being a Mexican guy who wears cowboy boots and kicks a bunch of butt. Maybe that's like huge over there. Maybe that's like the Steve Austin over there, you know, where he was like
the everyday man. You know,
that's what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be like the everyday brawler, but I guess that doesn't translate as much to us because he's the everyday Mexican brawler, not the everyday American brawler. You know, maybe that's why it's a little bit lost. And he's not as big a star. He's not as big in Lucha Underground as he is in Mexico.
Right. Well,
I mean, he's not bad. He's just, like you said, he's just kind of.
So what do you think the ultimate opportunity is going to be here? Which the winner of the best of five series will get.
Yeah, best of five. But we'll see. It the way Dario says it is that it's you know, there's probably going to be goofy, wacky gimmicks for each of the five matches. It's not just going to be five straight.
Right, but what do you think the ultimate prize will be? You know what I think it will be? It'll be a match to get a medallion.
You think it'll be a medallion?
So you got to fight after five times to get a match
then
for the opportunity to get a medallion.
For a medallion. So you don't think that the winner will get a medallion? You think they'll get an opportunity for a medallion?
Correct. Because, you know, with each prize, there's always something else.
Yeah, it's never just a straight, here, you win this. It's exactly. Like, you win this if you do this. Yeah. If you beat Dr. Wagner Jr., you now get this, you know. You can have $500,000. Right.
And then for the main event, we had the trio's title defended. Of course, Johnny Mundo not happy that he wasn't getting a title shot for the Lucha Underground gift title.
Or the Gift of the Gods.
He left. And he vividly, he told Dario that he wasn't going to be in the match, that he was going back to his training room. All right.
Yeah.
So after
they put Taya in.
Right. So
Taya takes this Taya spot.
Which, by the way, Taya's coming to Atlanta. Mucha Lucha Atlanta on October 16th. Let's be correct about that date. It's pretty cool. 4:30 p.m. In Norcross, Georgia. We're going to be the front row.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pretty cool to see Lucha Underground's Taya. And of course.
Well, I'm not a super.
She's
really big in Mexico. She's one of the bigger luchadoras.
There's a big story with her costing Pentagon Jr. the AAA title at Triple Mania. That's intriguing.
So they could play on that if they want to.
Right, because they haven't been in the same room, area, show since.
Okay.
It's what the stories are going with. These two have not been together since then.
Okay. Well, see, and Taya's not one of my favorites. Of the women on Lucha Underground, she's probably the least
one of the
favorite
least,
one who I want to see.
Agreed.
Yeah. She is really good. Now, what I do like about her and what I think makes her so successful in Mexico is her look and her height.
Yes.
Because she is very tall. She has an imposing stature against most of the luchadoras who are 5'4", 5'5". Taya's, you know, 5'10".
She keeps up with them.
And she keeps up with them. She's as fast as they are. You know, her persona works really well in the crowds in Mexico. You know, I think here in the United States is something we've seen a bit much of, you know, the blonde woman who thinks she's super hot. But, you know, like, I think there in Mexico, it's not as played out to the extent that we may feel that we've seen it.
Right.
So I think that's why she's so successful. I mean, I've seen some of the matches she has there and the kind of reactions she gets. You know, so she's made a good career out of it. And she, you know, if they put her in a match, is where we're thinking it may be against Xiomara, as that's kind of.
Well, actually, you know, not really. I saw that Ricardo, that's the owner, promoter of Mucha Lucha Atlanta, posted in a conversation that actually Xiomara will not be making.
She's not even going to be at the event. Okay.
No,
well,
I just found that out.
Then maybe they get another opponent for Taya, or maybe she just. It doesn't have a match, and she plays into the Pentagon thing.
Right.
Maybe
she could
they
come
make
out
her
with Mr. 450.
Yeah, or they make her as like a special referee or something. You know, they do something like that to where they play on that storyline, and she doesn't actually wrestle. I mean, knowing her and the way she is, she'll get involved. She'll take bumps and she'll take throw a couple shots, whether she's in the match or not.
Right.
But it'll be, you know, like you said, it'll be fun to see her. You know. See her 10 feet away from us. Maybe we can get a selfie with her as she's mid-match.
Maybe. So
that's kind of the.
So Airstar, Phoenix, and Drago retained. And then out came Joey Mundo and helped the Rudos beat up the champs. And then out came Sexy Star.
To even it up.
The Technicos. The baby
faces. To make it 4-on-4. Yeah. Yes. To make it kind of a 4-on-4.
Right. So I think we'll see a match with these four in the future. We may have already seen it if for those who already watched this past week's Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Or it's building to it, you know, possibly 4-on-4, you know, maybe elimination style, maybe, you know, whoever pins whomever, those belts are on the line, you know?
Right.
So if you pin one of the trios champions, maybe those belts change hands. If you pin Sexy Star, maybe you win the Gift of the Gods. You know, like they more than likely they those kind of wrenches will be thrown into a match, as it is Lucha Underground. And that's how Dario Cueto likes to play it, to try to mix it up and add a little extra intrigue to the matches.
Yes. Now, listen to me. You know, I know you're a big fan of the commentary of Matt Stryker. I've said I'm not that crazy about it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't, you know, he was his usual Matt Stryker throughout the show, but my biggest problem at the end of the show, he's questioning where Johnny Mundo really was, why he wasn't in that match. And I'm like, it's kind of like he had, like, his memory was gone. Because, I mean, they just told us why he wasn't there. He wasn't going to be there because he was didn't get the title shots that he wanted.
Yeah, but Matt's. But here's the thing, though. That was in one of the scenes, though, right? That was in Dario's office. Matt Stryker was not in Dario's office. How does Matt Stryker know that? See, that's the thing that they do, and that's what I like about it. Because instead of, okay, think about this: when WWE does something to set up a match,
monitors. They've got monitors.
He's only watching the match. In theory, there isn't a camera there. As fans, we see that. But there's not a camera that the wrestlers can watch. See, like, that's the thing with WWE. Like, they sit there and they have a meeting in an office and they pretend like no one's there, but they're playing to a camera. And then all the fans and the wrestlers are supposed to see this at the same time, like it's some live stream that goes around the building. Then why are you going around having supposedly private conversations that you don't want to have with people when you know everybody in the arena is watching? Okay, that's where they break down this fourth wall. Like, It's super real, but it's super BS. And it's super real and it's super BS. So at least with Lucha Underground, they stay consistent. So being that Matt Stryker was not there in that office, nobody saw that, okay? Being that nobody else was in the room when Dario Cueto smashed Mr. Cisco's head, nobody else can sit here and the whole world can't sit here and say, yes, we saw on the TV monitor when he smashed this guy's head. Why is he out of jail? You know, like, they're able to separate those. That is an independent scene that happened in a different room. It's like a movie. Just because the character's not there, the character doesn't know about it. Yeah. Matt Stryker is a character on the show. Still, he doesn't know about it.
I don't like
He's questioning it. It's like if it was a movie. Why? He has cameras or he has microphones in Dario's office.
He should be able to know. My way of watching wrestling, it's kind of like,
well, see, that's where Lucha Underground is.
Somebody should have told him, you know, hey, by the way, this is why. You know, somebody slipped him a note and told him that Dario had another announcement. Should have been, hey, Johnny is refusing to come out because he's not getting a title shot.
Well, so see, Taya's that's where Lucha
be in his place.
Well, see, that's with Lucha Underground, though. You're supposed to. It's takes things different path in a different storytelling way than wrestling typically does. Okay. That's why guys have superpowers. Okay. You know, like that's where, how Katrina can appear and disappear and stuff. Like, she can have superpowers because it's a fictional world. They don't sit here and try to ground it in the realism.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I just didn't like it. But alas, this episode of Lucha Underground definitely was a good one. It was a fun one. You know, we talk about all these wrestling shows and being hard to watch through them. I even get that with Lucha Underground at times. But this one, this one was pretty good to me.
It was top to bottom good show. And that's right. Like some episodes are but they're still not really like they're just not as good as others. But they're still not like unenjoyable, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Danny, let's take a look at this weekend for a moment. Continue to watch Ring of Honor as I continue to not watch Ring of Honor. To let people just know, I am boycotting Ring of Honor until they announce that there will be a Women of Honor title championship. On Wednesday on Twitter, Ring of Honor tweeted, "It's WOH Wednesday." Which I went and replied, it would be great to give them a title, a championship. Ring of Honor replied to me.
Was it It's the Women of Honor. Yeah. Yeah.
Ring of Honor replied to me and says, Sounds like something that could happen. Wink.
With a winky. Yes.
So that gives me an indication that, hey, it's something that they're thinking about. It's possible. You know?
Or they're
just
trolling
a nerd, you know, trolling me.
Yeah.
The social media trolls. Who knows?
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I'm still boycotting them. And I am not watching the All-Star Extravaganza, which is basically another co-branded pay-per-view with New Japan, because why have your own wrestlers out there give your stars and your upcoming guys, like one Lio Rush, who, by the way, tweeted out today that he wasn't happy, he wanted to get out of where he was. Something like that, he said. Let me get this straight.
He's going. I think that's in character, though. I think that's him going to Europe.
Because he's
not going to be at All Star Extravaganza. They announced today that the team that is supposed to be in the trios tournament with him and Jay White and somebody else, I can't recall. But he's supposed to be in a team for the trios tournament, and they announced that he wasn't in there because in Ring of Honor he's supposed to be having a shoulder injury. But really, he's going to do a tour of Europe for a few weeks.
Well, whatever he implied. My point is, you know what? He could be better at the show, but guess what? They have to make room for the Japanese guys. Anyways,
and now the CMLO guys, as Dragon Kid, will be on this show.
So these are some of the matches on the pre-show. We get Evil versus Silas Young versus Will Ferrara, and then we're gonna go down the line here. A Four Corner Survival Tag Match for the number one contenders for the tag titles, the All Night Express, one of your favorite teams, Danny. Versus Keith Lee and Shane Taylor, who've been destroying everybody as of late. Versus War Machine. Versus Colt Cabana and Dalton Castle. That's an odd pairing. Hangman Page versus Kyle O'Reilly. Jay Lethal versus Naito. So I guess Jay Lethal is no longer part of Los Ingobernables de Japón. Since he turned babyface, he probably
apparently
told
not.
Naito, hey, Naito, we can't get back together again.
He
broke up with him. It's just he's doing the honorable thing.
But he came and had them help watch his back against Bullet Club.
Yeah, well, it's
now apparently they're fighting.
Exactly. So now they're no longer friends.
I guess.
It all started when he went to Japan and he was in a multi-tag against Los Ingobernables de Japón for one of the destruction shows.
That's probably part of it,
Bobby Fish will defend the TV title versus Donovan Dijak. The Briscoes the Briscoes and Toru Yano versus Kushida, ACH, and Jay White in a six-man tag team championship tournament first-round match.
Kushida's taking the place of Lio Rush. Right.
Adam Cole will be defending the ROH world title against Michael Elgin. And I believe this is the main event. The Addiction will defend the World Tag Titles versus the Motor City Machine Guns and the Young Bucks in a Ladder Wars 6. I guess this is the sixth Ladder Wars.
Yes, it's the sixth Ladder War. Yeah, that would be my guess to be the match to close the show, because if you're not going to want... It's going to be pandemonium. You're not going to want a match that's one-on-one to try to follow something like that. The crowd's going to be destroyed by the time that match is done because the building's going to be destroyed. Yet again, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, a lot of good stuff on paper as far as matches goes, but a lot of them are inconsequential. So I went, you know, so you're still boycotting them. I went to the show this past Saturday. Some of the people have seen the reaction video to me seeing Jushin Thunder Liger.
If you haven't, you can go to YouTube. Our YouTube page, FOW Radio, and it'll be right there.
You can see my reaction is him coming out. If you follow us on social media, you can see the pictures of me meeting him prior to the show. So I went to the show, and it was already a B-level show, okay? Because the biggest names were in Japan. Adam Cole, the world champion, in Japan. the Briscoes in Japan, Red Dragon in Japan, therefore meaning Bobby Fish, your television champion, is in Japan. The Young Bucks are in Japan. That is the upper third of your roster right there. All of them not there.
Those are
all
your top guys.
Yes. Your main event for this show was Colt Cabana versus Jay Lethal in a Ringmasters Challenge. You know you're on a B-level show when your main event is a Ringmasters Challenge. Okay? The Ringmasters Challenge, I don't know who came up with it. I don't know the origin. I don't know if it's something that they dug out of the archives from 1970 or it's something they created just to make one match for a lot of time. The first fall was a pinfall only. Second fall is submission only. If it goes to a third fall, it would go to a 30-minute Ironman match. And basically, then whoever wins the Ironman match, that's kind of the tiebreaker. But that was the main event. Okay, so the only matches that I really enjoyed, Liger and Dalton Castle. Right. Fun, exciting. Wasn't as good as their first two matches. But that wasn't necessarily the point of it, I don't think. I think it was more of seeing Dalton Castle live, him getting the win, seeing Liger live. The only other really good match was Leo Rush versus Jonathan Gresham. Entirely inconsequential match. But from a technical standpoint, it was very strong. Leo Rush selling his injured shoulder. Jonathan Gresham working over that shoulder the whole time. Leo Rush gets the win with Rush Hour. Every single other match, entirely throwaway. ANX versus War Machine, a feud that happened 6 months ago that nobody cares about anymore. Caprice Coleman versus Delirious. You know you're on a B show when they have to bring out Delirious to fill out a card. Then you had Punisher Martinez coming out and crushing Will Ferrara. You had Stevie Richards. You know you're on a B show when Stevie Richards wrestles and he wrestled Silas Young. Okay, like it was as far as a feeling of importance, as far as the matches are concerned, as far as just the strength of the show, it was the weakest Ring of Honor show I've seen, period. And I've been I went to my first Ring of Honor show in 2003. Okay, I've probably been to 16, 17 different Ring of Honor shows over the years. And this one just, you know, had, like we talked, had Jushin Thunder Liger not been there, I wouldn't have bought a ticket. I would have skipped the Ring of Honor show because there was nobody there who I gave two craps about for the most part. No matches that made me go, hey, man, I can't miss this. And there were no matches that made me say that. What made me say that was seeing Jushin Thunder Liger in person. It was making me see a person, not see a match.
Yeah, because that's all you went for, to see Jushin Liger.
I went to meet Jushin Liger and to see him, you know, see him wrestle. And because he lost, he didn't even hit a lot of his signature spots. You know, now, he didn't hit a brainbuster.
If he hadn't wrestled, you still would have gone just to meet him, and then that's it.
If he was doing a meet and greet but not wrestling, yes, I probably would have still gone just to see him. Even if he came out and did a wave in the crowd and maybe showtaped somebody and left, you know. But like he didn't even hit a lot of his big spots because it was just a match. You know, it was kind of 70, you know, like 50% comedy, 50% actual wrestling. With him and the boys and him and Dalton and stuff, playing on the things they'd done in the previous two matches. But so the pay-per-view feels the same way, you know, like just a lot of, apart from one or two matches there, you know, the main event and really the TV title match.
Yeah.
None of the other matches have really any long build to them. Basically,
it's kind of hard to build matches when half of the roster on the show is from a different promotion.
That's the problem.
Together.
That's the problem. And so you're having Michael Elgin fight Adam Cole, which, you know, was a big feud last year, but it doesn't make any sense now. Nobody cares right now. Michael Elgin just lost the Intercontinental.
Exactly.
He just lost the Intercontinental Championship. Why is he getting a Ring of Honor title shot? Oh, yeah, because he and Adam Cole fought a bunch last year. Wow. That doesn't make him a deserving contender.
Right.
You know? And so what if he wins the belt? He's technically still not a Ring of Honor contracted employee. He's a contracted employee of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So then he takes the belt to New Japan and the belt's in Japan more than it's in the United States. You know, like it's – it doesn't make any – it's – they're frustrating – I think they're frustrating everybody. I think there's a core group of fans, even the core group of fans who like the influx, the Japanese talent, I think to this point are starting to go, you know what? Maybe we're getting too much of the Japanese guys and not enough of actual Ring of Honor.
You can agree, Danny. This is not the same Ring of Honor that it was 10 years ago.
It's not. And that's because like Ring of Honor's always been built on strong matches with athletic competition. But what they also had was story that tied these together. Even if the story was just competitiveness between athletes. And even now at this point, it doesn't feel like you're getting that. Who's like you're getting a little bit of that.
Is it Delirious or is it Sinclair? Or is it a combination of both?
Being that I don't know the inner workings of the company, I really can't say. I think it's a large part of Sinclair because they're trying to expand their TV market. And to them, bringing talent, internationally known talent, helps expand their TV market. I think Delirious is kind of having to work with what he's given. And so you can't do a whole lot with these Japanese guys who come in because you can't write storylines for them. You can't write continuing feuds for them because they're not going to be there consistently. So he has to book with what he has. But then he's also got people from New Japan saying, okay, well, we can't have this guy lose to this person. We can't have this guy lose in this match. We want this person to fight this person, but they can't lose. And if they do lose, they can't lose straight up. You know, like I think no matter what Delirious wants to do, I think there's so many people telling him, you can't do this, you have to do this. You can't do this, you have to do this. So whether it's his fault directly or not, he's as big a fault as anybody.
Will you be watching All-Star Extravaganza this Friday night? There's a lot of shows happening this weekend.
I will definitely not be watching it live, no. Okay. I will probably catch certain matches, you know, the Ladder War, Dijak and Fish probably. But I do not intend to pay $35 to watch the entire show.
Fair enough. I wouldn't either, even if I wasn't boycotting it. All right, so from there, let's move on to the Far East while we're at it. The New Japan. Now, we talked about Destruction, the Destruction shows. We talked about Destruction in Tokyo and Hiroshima, I believe it was. So we ended with Sunday morning for us. You know, and I mentioned that I wasn't going to stay out for that one.
And then you end up staying up for that one. Yeah. You say you won't stay up for them, but you do. You say, I don't know if I'll stay up for this one, and then you usually do.
All right, so a couple of highlights for me here. First of all, Matt Sydal didn't make Japan. He was, you know, he ended up landing in Hawaii. That's all questionable right now, what's going on. But he's basically been written out of everything. And we have new never open weight 6-man tag champs as Ricochet, Kojima, and David Finlay defeated the Bullet Club of Adam Cole, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson to win the vacant 6-man tags.
Because they vacated the championship.
Yeah, they outright stripped them.
Because Matt couldn't make the one show.
Yes. They stripped
but we don't know is it something that he's at fault or was it like a plane thing and they had to land in Hawaii?
I hear sketch. There may be more to it than meets the eye. It sounds like there's more than just, oh, you just missed the flight or you had travel issues. They may have been more. Not sure if it was Matt's fault, but there's more to it than that.
With it being international, the news is going to take longer to trickle over.
From there, we're talking about this in a moment, but I just want to get that out. Of course, the Intercontinental title change has Naito defeated Michael Elgin. Great match. A lot of interference, as one would expect there to be. The other bigger news is that we have a new Bullet Club member.
Yeah.
As Captain New Japan turned
Captain Jobber
Yoshitatsu. And you know, and it started two-sweeting Chase Owens and Takahashi, and I guess he's not gonna be Captain Bullet Club.
I guess so.
He is no longer the Bullet Club Hunter.
He wasn't the Bullet Club Hunter.
They were like the Bullet Club Hunters when they were together, him and Yoshitatsu.
Gotcha. Captain New Japan's terrible. The guy doesn't win matches. I guess he decided if he's not going to win matches, maybe he'll at least team with Takahashi and lose matches on the other side of the ring for once.
So, Danny, so check this out. This is the tiers of the Bullet Club, okay? You've got the Elite.
The Elite, yeah.
Omega, the Young Bucks, and Adam Cole.
Yeah.
Then you have, you know, the Hawks division, the Gorillas in Fale, and the Gorillas of Destiny.
Yeah.
And then you have the lower tier, Chase Owens, Takahashi, and
Captain Hangman Page. Yeah. It's pretty much the NWO where you have the levels of stardom. You had the Wolfpack, you know, or the original starters, which were, you know, Hogan and Scott Hall and Eric Bischoff, or Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. And you could even throw Macho Man in there if you wanted to, depending on it. And then you had your B-level guys, which, were, you know, your guys who were fighting for secondary titles. Some of them were coming in and out, you know, at times Mr. Perfect, you know, Steiner, Kurt Hennig. Buff. Yeah, Steiner and Buff and Norton, you know, for a while there. And then you had your bottom-level guys like Horace Vincent. Hogan and Vincent and The Disciple, you know? So it's getting to the point that everybody feared it would, because of the popularity. They're just going to continue to do with it of people coming and people going and people coming and people going.
Yeah.
But there's less people leaving the Bullet Club. The only reason right now people are leaving the Bullet Club is because they're leaving Japan.
Well, you know, and this is something funny that, I mean, I read this somewhere, I can't remember where, and I don't know how true this is, but was that Omega and the Young Bucks wanted to leave the Bullet Club. And
they wanted to leave Japan, the Bullet Club. And them. They just wanted to be the Elite and not be part of the Bullet Club.
Right, anymore. So I guess they compromised and they're the Elite of the Bullet Club.
Okay.
I don't know how much truth there is to that, but I don't think the Omega and the Young Bucks need the Bullet Club.
I think that's the thing.
They were part
the
of
Bullet
it
Club
to
needs
get,
them
to get to the next level. I think that they were ready to step out once AJ left. Once Gallows and Anderson left. Really, they were the heart of the Bullet Club. It was their baby.
Yeah.
But alas. So that's it for the Destruction shows. So now we're moving on to the second biggest New Japan show of the year, King of Pro Wrestling. It's happening October the 10th. I'm not going to go through all the matches that are happening. But just going to highlight a few of these.
Yeah.
First, the Bullet Club is going to defend the Young Bucks are going to defend the junior tag titles against David Finlay and Ricochet. The IWGP titles will be on the line. The Briscoes defending against the Gorillas of Destiny.
Then
Shibata is going to defend the Never Openweight title versus Kyle O'Reilly. Assuming that he's healthy, this match I salivate thinking about. And then the January 4th title shot is on the line once again as Kenny Omega defends against Goto. I don't know why Goto deserves another shot at this since he cleanly lost to Omega.
Why not?
And Okada will be defending the IWGP heavyweight title against Maru Fuji as, you know, he's on this tour of, you know, righting all the wrongs from the G1 climax.
Yeah.
And then from there, we're going to get a bunch of
multi-mans and tag matches. That it may be fun and exciting, but they really have no bearing or weight on it.
Right. And so this comes from a point where Matt Sydal out of the picture, because now you get Ricochet and Dave Finlay Jr. here challenging for the titles on October 10th. So the fact that they decided Matt Sydal, we don't need you at all. Okay.
Yeah.
And lastly, I want to say is David Finlay has looked great this summer, and he was a big standout of the Destruction shows, in my opinion. Yeah. This kid, I don't know if I tweeted this or not, but I think that this kid can be a main event, a top guy in the future. He definitely has something in, you know. He's got a better build than his dad does. He's less short and stocky.
Yeah, he's more of a lean build.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I think that he can do a lot. He's a lot more athletic. So, I don't know. I think that the sky could be the limit with this guy, and he's doing very well. He's progressing very well. I mean, I remember watching him last year and now seeing him this year. Definitely a much better.
And he's still very young.
Yes.
He's still very young. So he's, you know, I mean, he's only 22, 23. So he still has a lot of time to grow. You know, similar to Jay White, he could either come back stateside and start running the independents, or he could try his luck and continue with New Japan and see if maybe he stays with them another year and does another junior tournament. And maybe he does a lot better this year. Maybe he gets a lot more wins, gets to the finals or something, you know, depending on what they want to do with him.
Yeah. A couple of other shows happened this weekend back in the U.S. FIP All or Nothing back on WWNLive.com. A couple of matches that got my attention. Fred Yehi defending the FIP title against Caleb Conley. And the Hooligans will be defending the tag titles against Flying Solo. That's Jason Kidd and Aaron Solo. And the Florida Heritage title will be defended as Martin Stone will go 1-on-1 against Nathan Cruz. Big three
matches. Not to be confused with Nathan Jones.
Right.
Not the same guy, just in case.
Yeah. And a bunch of different other multi-people matches, singles matches, other feuds going on in Full Impact Pro. But those three matches, man, alone worth every penny. So that'll also be this Friday, 8 p.m. I guess when people are hearing this, it'll be today, tonight.
Yeah.
At 8 p.m. So definitely it'll be a great show to check out. Of course, Danny, I will not be here on Friday night.
You plan on dying.
I won't be watching either FIP. I definitely won't be watching Ring of Honor. Because I will be in Chicago.
Yes.
I will be in Chicago for Freelance Wrestling, Freelance Strikes Back. You know, we talked to Maxwell Bombay last week about the show. Check that episode out. We'll get a full a full preview of the show. Of course, a couple of changes since then. Mustafa Ali will now be defending his title against DJZ, and the N-Words will be defending their titles against Zero Gravity due to a couple of pullouts. Lince Dorado, of course, as we now know, is on the WWE roster full-time and NXT. Yes. So he wasn't able to fulfill his last few independent dates.
Sometimes the guys are, sometimes they aren't. Right. And with him, I guess they opted not to.
And Mr. 450 joined the Scramble match since DJZ got moved up to the main event here. So it's going to be a great show. Definitely one. People need to check out freelancewrestling.com. 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, Friday night. Definitely another show. If you watch, for example, if you were to skip Ring of Honor like I am, you could watch FIP at 8, follow up with Freelance Wrestling at 10. Freelance Wrestling, only $5 to watch the stream via freelancewrestling.com. That'll be fun. And look out for me, as I will be there front row live in living color.
Just look a little. You just have to look to the bottom portion of your screen, because those of you who may not have met the Yellow Man, he was not blessed with great height.
No, Well, I don't think most Hispanic people were blessed with height, but
yeah,
they are a
lot of your listeners, of our listeners, may not realize that you're actually Hispanic, though.
That's true. That's true. Talk about the whole language barrier here,
and they can hear your Spanish accent. You know, a lot of our listeners still may not grasp that. They may have just think you're a little slow.
Right.
It's actually because English is not your first language.
Yes, I am not slow. But speaking of slow, what is slow is the news about the future of TNA.
Wow, powerful segue there. Wow, that was nice.
Danny, I tell you the words. The word has been with TNA is that they don't have any money for tapings. Yeah. And they don't have any money
for Bound for Glory.
They're, I think, like over $500,000 short for production.
Part of the thing is people think that they spent a good portion of that money just to convince Cody Rhodes to join them. But if I don't imagine they paid Cody Rhodes $500,000 up front.
No.
So whether they got him or not, they still would have had difficulty making the money. But
yes.
So there's a couple different theories about what could happen with TNA. They're up for sale, basically.
Theorize, please.
Yes. One of them being that Billy Corgan may go ahead and take principal ownership by the company, basically. Because I don't think he'll become sole owner, but it looks like the Carters finally are wanting to get out. They're tired of
Papa Carter is out. This is 100% self-funded now.
Okay, so it's just Dixie and Billy. So that's part of the thing. So they don't have Papa's money. So that would be one of the big theories. It would be Billy Corgan takes a bigger share and becomes much more of an owner of the company. I assume there's probably another interested party or two that we don't know of.
Company where the Harris twins are part of.
Okay. Yeah,
they're the ones that are producing the shows right now.
Okay, so
they have funded it in the past.
Okay, and then the big thing, of course, is supposedly if no one else purchases it, Titan Sports is interested. Yeah, the McMahons, and they're interested. Probably with a 0-hour sale, similar to how they did with WCW.
Yeah, they want to buy it for like pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and the word being they don't want to buy it and utilize it. It's similar with WCW. They would just close it. They want it for the tape library,
and a handful of contracts,
and then fold it.
Zero debt.
So it's supposed to be Friday, the end of the, you know, by like, I guess. Their other, you know, if I say, because the banks are going to only be working till Friday evening, they can only fund the lawyer paperwork on Fridays, I guess, unless you do special things. But so from what we're hearing is if there's not a deal made by the end of the day Friday, Bound for Glory on Sunday may not happen. So we could sit here and do a whole 2 or 3 hours about TNA, where they started, where they are, where they've been. What kind of impact this could potentially have on the wrestling world if they fall, what kind of impact TNA's already made possible, negative or positive, because of their struggles for the last few years. Many people
don't watch it.
Well, not just that. I'm talking about the professional wrestling industry as a whole.
Yeah.
Some people claim that they've kind of hurt in a lot of the casual fans' eyes, the possibility of an alternative product, because people go to see this and they don't really like it, and so they're not as willing to give other alternative products a shot, be it go see them live, watch them on television. And then there's a lot of people who say, well, they're helping to give money to independent guys who can now, when they go back to independent promotions, possibly generate more interest, earn more money. You know, guys like Crazy Steve and Rebel were able to go to GPW and sign autographs and make some money and wrestle there in decent amount of space on the card because of the exposure that they got from TNA. But if this falls, what happens? You know, automatically you have a lot of people, you know, not just wrestlers, but so many other people who's, if not their primary source of income, one of the large sources of income in their family is hurting. Possible the stranglehold of the McMahons gets even tighter at the top. Possibly, you know, it could turn out to be a positive thing in the long run, where a bad business falls and other businesses that were struggling a little more are now able to thrive and get bigger. But that is more of a long-term thing. The immediate term thing is there's now no number two slot. Ring of Honor kind of falls into that by default, so to speak, just because they have national television, you know, and they have pay-per-views. But that doesn't, you know, that basically just means that McMahons get to write more of history over and just kind of downplay anything they want. And it's, to me, in the immediate future, if something is not done with TNA, the immediate future there's much higher backlash. I think there's a much more negative aspect to the immediate future. In the next couple of years, there could be a much greater positive out of it. You know, I mean, because of ECW and WCW falling, we got a resurgence in independence. We got companies like Ring of Honor. We got companies like Combat Zone Wrestling to thrive. You know, and we got so many places for stars to be able to work and work their way up to the bigger areas and to places where they could make a better living. But all that remains to be seen. I hope something happens with TNA. I hope they're able to find a buyer, find an investor, find somebody who can help take them and literally reshape and rebrand them for the positive, going on the positive aspects of what's worked for them in the past and playing on that, as opposed to, hey, here's a lot of money, here's what worked with WCW, so we're just going to try to make this WCW and blow a crap ton of money by eliminating all the things that made TNA individual and just try to make them WWE light, as it seemed that was kind of the plan with Hogan and Bischoff, was to just try to use TNA to recreate WCW, recreate the Monday Night Wars. But it wasn't, you know, you can't put lightning in a bottle twice. You can't make, you know, so it just, they need something to happen to keep things to stay. And I think to keep the immediate future of the business stronger, I think you need something positive. I think they need to stay around and they need to come back stronger, at least for the short term.
Well, if we do get a Bound for Glory, this is what we get.
Yes.
Cody Rhodes will be in action. Against who? We don't know. I mean, okay. We're assuming he's going to be in action. Otherwise, what the heck are you paying him for? DJZ will be defending the X Division title against somebody. There will be a Bound for Gold gauntlet. And the participants are Tyrus, Robbie E, Baron Dax, Jesse Goddard, Basil Baraka, and somebody to be announced later.
Some other jobbers and stuff that nobody really cares about, yeah.
Then Maria will be defending her TNA Knockouts title against the soon-to-be first Women Hall of Famer for TNA.
Possibly only ever.
Yep. And then Aaron Rex.
Gail Kim.
Gail Kim. Aaron Rex versus Drew Galloway for the Grand Championship. Which was formerly the King of the Mountain Championship, which was formerly the TV Championship, the Legends Championship,
and probably 10 others in there.
A note here is that Drew Galloway is actually injured.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, this is the thing about taping, right? He was able to participate in the tapings, and since then he's gotten injured, so his status for Bound for Glory is just as questionable as TNA's. So we may find out what happens if there is a Bound for Glory. Then the Great War for the tag team titles, the Hardys versus the Decay. That should be a fun one.
And yeah, that's...
For the TNA world title, Lashley will defend against EC3. And that is your pay-per-view for Sunday night. If we do get a pay-per-view for Sunday night, Bound for Glory, the biggest show of the year for total non-stop action. Is that what it's called? I totally forgot what TNA stands for.
Total non-stop action, yeah. But see, somewhere along the way, they kind of went away from the name TNA and just kind of rebranded as Impact Wrestling, but then they keep coming back to TNA. Like, so I think that gives a lot of confusion to fans. They kind of seemingly switching back and forth. But yeah, like you said, that is the show if it happens. But see, where I think that card is subject to a lot of change. You know, because we're also hearing word that now people's flights and travel are being canceled. I haven't heard who and what names, but I've heard that that's something that's stirring around.
I saw on Twitter that Robbie E had a booking for Sunday, so I think he's making Plan B in case Bound for Glory doesn't happen.
Well, even if Bound for Glory doesn't happen, he still might not make that show on Sunday.
Right.
He's become known for
not
showing up everywhere. Yeah, when he's supposed to.
Well, look, I don't wish anyone bad will. Hope that the Dixie is no longer part of TNA wrestling, and as I think that she has been part of the problem for TNA, and the people that she has hired to be in charge, De La Ghana, and that
Gabrielic.
Right. Well, how do you pronounce his name? I'm not gonna. Well, let me butcher it. His name is supposed to be John Gabrielic.
I didn't know if it was Gap. I didn't know the pronunciation of it either.
I mean, was a gopher for Kevin Dunn.
Yeah.
So, at least that's what I hear. I don't know personally. But, so yeah. So, to me, no. I think DC needs to go. But I hope that Impact Wrestling, TNA, or whatever it wants to call itself, does see a light at the end of the tunnel. Because look, let's be honest, okay? AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, yes, they were legends for Ring of Honor, but look at how much exposure they got through TNA. Could AJ Styles have gotten the opportunities that he has right now, had he not gone to TNA for so long? Maybe.
Absolutely not. But he would not because he left Ring of Honor when the whole Rob Feinstein scandal came about. He and several others, they were doing Ring of Honor and they were doing TNA and some other places. But when that came up, they said, I don't want to be associated with Ring of Honor anymore. Thankfully, they had TNA to fall on, and TNA could build stuff around them so their name could stay out there. They could continue to make money instead of having to go back to, you know, regionals, instead of AJ having to come back and try to find something in Georgia that was going on that he could literally latch onto. And Samoa Joe going back to California and trying stuff, or maybe going back to Japan. You know, it was because of that. And I think because of TNA, the popularity of the independent style was brought to a showcase. People were seeing it for the first time that hadn't really seen it before. You know, your X Division and being able to see all these old time legends that you thought were dead, like wrestle again. You know, like when it started out, it was basically like an independent. It basically set the model for what most independent shows are now. You see some young guys who are good, you know, fast-paced, hard-hitting action. You see a couple old guys you hadn't seen in a while that wrestle. You see some guys you haven't seen, you know, you haven't heard of. You know, I think the old Asylum days of TNA kind of set the mold for what's now just about your kind of your average middle-of-the-road, upper-level standard independent show.
Yeah, so it has a lot of questions of whether or not AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, but mostly I think AJ, could have gotten the opportunity that he has gotten now if it hadn't been for tenure that was spent on TNA. But, you know, for all of the things that people didn't like about TNA, people complain about Ring of Honor, people complain about WWE, people complain about everything. At the end of the day, it's pro wrestling. You don't have to agree with the storylines. You don't have to like some of the production value or the annoying announcers or commentators. But at the end of the day, it's pro wrestling. We love it. That's why we talk about it. And that's why we will continue to watch it. So we hope that TNA Impact Wrestling finds a new owner and a bright future ahead of them. And with that, that is our show. I appreciate everyone listening. We will be back again next week. Look forward to seeing what happens with TNA and everything else going on in pro wrestling. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at FOW Radio. Follow us on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F and Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. Subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, Podbean, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Google Play. And until next time, keep watching
wrestling.